Hello and welcome. You are listening to Undercurrent News. My name is Jan Lepetun and with me is Jason Smith. Jason is our America's editor and he's also the driving force behind our yearly bestseller report, World's 100 Largest Seafood Companies. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Jan. How are you?
I've asked you to come online to tell us a little bit more about the report that you just published. So hopefully we'll give our listeners a bit of insights as to what it covers and what it tells us about the trends in the industry overall. First of all, maybe for those listeners who don't know, just tell us briefly, what does the report cover? What is it about?
Sure. Well, the easiest way to explain it is that the top 100 refers to the 100 largest seafood companies by sales. So what we do is we essentially look for we look for the biggest companies that are earning the most revenue, and we verify that revenue, and we rank them, and then we do entries basically summarizing what the company does and what's new with the company. We've been those entries are based on the reporting that we do all year and some new reporting, and the end product is about a 300-page report that tells you who the biggest players are in the seafood industry and what they're doing.
So is it really worth compiling a report about it? Why would somebody do it? Isn't not something that you can simply Google?
My wife thinks it's a really weird hobby, but there is a business reason for it, and that's that you would think that it would just be easy to go out and find this information, but it's really, really not. Unfortunately, there is no central resource to figure out who the biggest players in seafood are. So we decided to create one. Like I said, Undercurrent was started in 2012, and the first report we did in 2013, because it was really something that the industry was crying out for, was to know who were the movers and shakers in the sector. And I think we've gone about charting that.
So what does it tell the readers? Is it just about who the biggest players in the industry are, or does it tell us something about the trends, where the industry is going?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's not, in addition to telling you, what's going on within all these individual companies, in terms of, and when I say that, what I mean is, for example, if a company's gone through a merger or an acquisition, if they're seeing success with a particular species, if they're not seeing success with a particular species, if they're affected by tariffs, if they're, were involved, unfortunately in a lawsuit or something like that, it really distills down the reporting that we do all year long into kind of a summary. So it gives you what's going on with the companies, but it also, if you read these entries, these are the most important players in the sector. So it really gives you a sense of what's going on with seafood generally. For instance, one of the things I found interesting, CP Foods, the largest shrimp supplier in the world, they've this year for the first time published their revenues, and they were so much greater than they published their shrimp focused revenues, their aquaculture revenues, and they were so much greater than everybody thought. And in addition to that, the revenues didn't they actually grew. They did not decline, even though the shrimp pricing environment isn't that great right now.
Okay, interesting. So what do we do about the companies that do not publish their accounts? How do you get information about not listed companies or not transparent companies?
Well, the first thing to know is how we do the rest of it, I think, is the easiest place to start, which is, I start with all of the things that we can find. For example, a lot of the publicly traded Norwegian farmers publish their accounts. Same thing with companies like Clearwater in Canada and some of the large public companies. And then we move on to the company registries. In Europe, for example, they have a lot of times the accounts have to be published by law. So what you do is that leaves a cohort of, sometimes a couple dozen companies that, everybody in the sector knows are big. Cook, for example, is a very large company out of Canada. And, you know, the first step is we ask the companies to, you know, we ask the companies to disclose. And in many cases, you know, the companies are happy to, you know, say this is the sales we made last year. And, you know, this is what's new. And in the cases where they don't, you know, that's when it gets a little trickier. And that's where, you know, it helps that we have, you know, a network of sources. And, you know, we go through and we do a very detailed estimation exercise to, you know, try and put a number on it. And, you know, I mean, they're estimates. We do the best we can. You know, I stand behind them, but it's an ongoing process, and we come up with the best information that we can to come up with these figures.
Now everybody can see why it takes you, what is it, 2-3 months to produce it?
Yeah, it's about 3 months of effort, and the reason for that is, you know, again, the other complexity is it's things like currency rates. Everything is translated from, you know, from the domestic currencies that the companies report in to, you know, we take, you know, Ava, our company co-founder, she has this, she's done a lot of work in developing the best way to really come up with a common standard, a benchmark to judge these companies as far as getting the proper exchange rates averaged over the year. And when you do that, when you translate everything and you try to mitigate some of the currency effects, that's how you're able to come up with a list of 1 to 100. You know, so you're not having to compare, you know, yen and pesos and rubles and everything else. You know, and that's the anything that takes 3 months to do. I mean, things are going to happen during that 3 months. So we were very close to finishing the report last year, and Bumblebee filed for bankruptcy. So we, of course, you know, went back and updated that because we want to give people a report that's as up to date as possible. But, you know, it seems like these days in the seafood sector, you better get the report published quickly because things are changing every couple of days, it seems.
So what does the report tell us about the prevailing industry winds, so to say?
Well, you know, it's still, I mean, I was looking the other day at our 2013 report and comparing it to, you know, our most recent report, and it's still a very much a fragmented industry, but you really are seeing the effects of consolidation. And, you know, whether that's both consolidation and vertical integration, I don't think that's news to a lot of people in the sector. But again, to see it laid out, let me just grab you an example. For example, if you look at two big industry consolidators, Cook in Canada and Parley Vliet in Vanderplas in the Netherlands, when we started this report in 2013, Cook was ranked 63rd and PNP was 37th. And Cook at that time was mostly a salmon farmer, purely a salmon farmer. And PNP at that time, I believe, only had only caught, you know, two groups of species. And now if you look at it, you know, Cook has, it seems like, you know, has made a number of huge acquisitions. You know, last year, for example, Omega Protein, you know, certainly they're in talks to buy other companies all the time. Like I say, they were 63 in 2013, and now they're the 14th largest overall. With PNP, they were 37th in 2013, and now they're 19th overall. And if you look at, and some companies have gone the other way, you know, Pacific Andes, which at the time was, I believe, the 13th largest company in seafood, is now, is obviously there's the ongoing bankruptcy process, and now they are 59th in our last report. So there's always churn from year to year, and you have new companies coming in, you have old companies falling off. So that's what keeps it interesting. That's why I like to do it, because it gives me a very good way to keep on track of the sector.
You produce this nice map where you highlight the number of companies that make the top 100 list. and the Japanese ones are usually on top with over 20 companies. Do you think it can be challenged at some point in the near future?
You know, I do. I think that I think that's one of the more slow moving and interesting stories in seafood is that you have the two biggest companies in seafood are companies they're Maruha Nichiro and Nisui Nippon Susan Kaisha, and those two companies I don't think that even in the next couple of years that you'll see them toppled from their spots. Because they're, Nisui has a $1 billion lead on the next the next company, Dongwon Enterprise out of Korea, South Korea. But I do think that if you look further down the list, a big part of the reason that we have so many large Japanese companies is that they were focused on the Japanese market, and many of these are wholesalers or their distributors. They're not necessarily vertically integrated companies where they're going out and catching. They're buying from other companies. So while the sales figure is high, they don't necessarily have the same interaction with the resource that a big vertically integrated company Ostevall out of Norway or even Trident out of the U.S. would have. So yes, to answer your question, I think that in the next, it'll be interesting to see what the what continues with the Japanese and the South Korean companies and other even in the U.S. But I don't think that we will see as many Japanese companies in this report 5 years from now, and that's simply because the demographics in Japan, it's an aging country, and they're just not consuming as much fish as they once did.
So what can we expect in 2020 to happen based on all the previous trends that you highlighted and that you reflected in the previous top 100 reports?
Well, I think consolidation is a big one. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. I'm just looking at the list now, and several of the companies that made our most recent list, we've broken stories that they're in the midst of sale processes. Like American Seafood's the big pollock catcher, obviously. It's always interesting that you're going to have you'll have the consolidators rising up the ranks, but you'll also have new companies take their place. Where are those new companies going to come from? Well, it really, some of that depends on what the species pricing does. For example, when salmon companies in recent years have had a lot of success on the list because the pricing is better. And you see that as reflected in the M&A activity too, obviously, because you have companies like Agro Super coming in and buying up Aqua Chiles, one famous example. I think consolidation is a big trend. I also think that there's going to continue to be a focus with Asian companies climbing up the ranks and also doing more deals with other companies. For example, Mazzetta, which is on our list, a U.S. Importer and distributor, they've been the talk of potentially sales, potentially a deal with other with Dongwon out of South Korea, and they've been tied to other potential deal talks as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And then the other one is with the Russian companies. Russia's investing a lot with their Far East fleet. You'll see they're improving their quality. They're making a lot of investments, and I believe that you'll have a lot more to come on future lists.
And again, speaking about the ongoing trends in terms of species, what do we see going on there?
Well, in like I mentioned, the in salmon, you know, Norwegian salmon prices and Chilean salmon prices were not as high as they were, but they were certainly still favorable. And you see that, you know, and for the public companies especially, these companies aren't losing money. And in Chile, you know, that was the case in 2014 and in 2015, I believe it was, and in earlier in the decade. So it's a relatively good time to be a salmon farmer. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the, I know a lot of people are looking at RAS salmon in the US, these big land-based projects. These are pre-revenue, so they're not going to be anywhere near our list for a couple of years. But you never know. I mean, in a couple of years, you might see some of these. You might see a Nordic Aqua Farms. You might see a Atlantic Sapphire on make the biggest companies in seafood.
Jason, my last question perhaps would be, who's your target audience for this report?
The people who find it, I think, most useful are, you know, it's generally our core readership. It's the executives who are with buyers and sellers of seafood who want to know how the competition shapes up and the trends are that are shaping the industry. But it's also, you know, I've looked at customer lists for previous reports, and it's a really good primer for people who maybe are interested in seafood but don't know anything about it. You know, we've made sales previously to you know, investment funds and, you know, nonprofits who want to know who are looking at sustainability issues in the sector. So I think that it plays nicely with both audiences, both people who really are looking to drill down on what's going on with these individual companies and people who want that broad overview and introduction to the sector. Like I say, I enjoy doing it every year because there's a lot going on in this industry. And if that's often reflected well at some of these conferences, but it's also very easy to lose track of just how much is changing and what a dynamic sector it is. And I think that's displayed hopefully well in the report.
Well, Jason, I'm glad you're having fun producing this report. I hope that our readers will have it as well reading the report. If you would like more detail, please go to www.undercurrentnews.com/reports or just send us an email. Jason, thank you very much.
Thanks, John.